The massive Gehrman Road fire in Douglas County, which has burned more than 8,000 acres and dozens of homes, cabins, garages, and outbuildings, is now 100% contained. But that doesn't mean it's under control. This hour, we'll get updates on the fire and stories from those who covered it and those who have been impacted by it. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side. I'm joined now by reporter Danielle Kading of WRNC in Ashland. She covered the evacuation of dozens of residents living in the fire's path yesterday. Good afternoon, Danny.
Good afternoon, Rich. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. So how many people were evacuated yesterday, and what's happened with them now?
Well, at least more than 50 people were forced from their homes as the fire grew and the wind shifted on Tuesday evening. And I talked to one Red Cross worker, the executive director of the Northland chapter, Judy Gonzalez, and she estimated that probably 100 people had been forced from their homes, but not everybody went to the evacuation center, which was a temporary shelter that was put up at the Drummond High School. Some people opted to stay in their cars or stay with friends and family, but be close to the shelter. And what's happening right now is that people are allowed to return to their homes. The roads have been opened, and the fire, as you said, is contained but not under control.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are just kind of going back to see what's left, see if there's anything they can salvage and whether their homes are still standing.
And Danny, I'm wondering, what did you? I imagine you spoke with some of the people themselves. How were they handling this? Was there a sense of panic?
You know, I think they handled it remarkably well. I saw them the morning after they had to leave the place they called home for many of them decades, and I think that they were tired, they were stressed, but they were happy that they had been treated so well by people all along the way. They received calls, some of them late in the evening on Tuesday, telling them to evacuate. And they praised the coordination and the efforts of emergency responders, fire officials, emergency management, and the Red Cross, saying that they had been treated very well, that they were glad that no one had been hurt as they were leaving their homes and firefighters were rushing in to help save them. So I think there was more an attitude of gratitude than there was. Obviously, people were upset. There were people who were crying, and there were people who were asking a lot of questions, wondering, you know, where exactly the fire was and whether or not their neighborhood had been affected. But
mm-hmm.
There's a resilience up here in people who live in this part of the state, and I think that showed in their attitude on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Very good. We now bring on WPR's Superior Bureau reporter, Mike Simonson, who covered Governor Walker's and Congressman Sean Duffy's visit with the firefighters today in Gordon. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, and it was warm. You know, like 50 degrees, 46 in Superior, and 77 out there, which is perfect fire weather. But we've got things pretty much tamped down except for the mop-up work.
And the governor did this. He declared a state of emergency. Does that mean that there's going to be any disaster aid? Do we know?
Well, it means that state resources are available to people affected by the fire. You know, a couple of Black Hawk helicopters have been dumping water, and obviously the DNR has been in it from the start, and there will be some money from just a whole host of agencies, from the insurance Department of Insurance, which can help people file claims, WEDA, the Housing and Economic Development Authority, access to funding for people who have to stay in hotels, and Department of Administration is going to get into the act for businesses that are hurt by the fire, and Department of Health Services will help anybody with local health departments. I think they're talking about trauma of this thing, and of course the DNR and Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, which is going to help farmers.
And set the scene, if you would, today with the governor. And was it a photo op, or was there some genuine concern there?
Well, it was definitely a photo op. You know, the governor said, look, I waited until this fire was contained, which it is. That was declared last night. And then I don't want to use a Black Hawk that's going to be dumping water in an emergency to survey the area, which is what he did this afternoon. But, you know, the emergency is past. What we have now is putting out flames of stumps and trees. And this was such a hot fire that the photographers who were at the news conference today were telling me about, just driving down the road and just watching, you know, like God and the burning bush, it just boom, blew up just in front of their eyes. Mm-hmm. And just spotty things like that because the ground is so hot. So that's what the crews are doing now. But it was a photo op, but it was a good op to be able to thank a lot of the emergency workers, the first responders, and the firefighters, many of them, volunteer fire departments and volunteer firefighters, and many of them very, very tired.
I imagine. And I imagine you were a little tired yourself because you had been covering this thing pretty much. You started on Tuesday, and you were in the studio pretty late. How much sleep were you able to get?
Well, I got more than those guys, but
right,
it's been about 35 hours of work in the last 3 days, and counting. But it's something that we need to, as reporters, and especially radio, we can get things on immediately, and emergency management was using us to get the word out on Tuesday night as this fire blew up. I mean, this thing just caught everybody by surprise. It went so fast. One firefighter told me today that at the height of this, when the winds were the strongest on Tuesday night, and it was going through the Pine Barrens, that it progressed 3 miles in 15 minutes. It was unstoppable and uncontrollable and very frightening.
Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah. And it was also a chance today for town officials to say, hey, Governor Walker, we want you to know that our town might not be there today were not for these guys, you know, the DNR and for the Forest Service and the Volunteer Fire Department. So Walker and Congressman Duffy did get the chance to say thanks, but they were told how important this response was. I mean, we all know what happened at Katrina. They didn't pull the trigger soon enough, and that was a disaster on top of a disaster. Here, this was a disaster that could have been a lot worse.
So what happens now? Where do we go from this point, or what was your sense from the visit today?
I would have called in a little bit earlier, but I was talking to the emergency management director of Douglas County, and he said on Saturday they're at the Barnstown Hall at 10 a.m. they're going to meet with anybody affected by this fire and let them know what's available to them and let them know how they can help. 47 structures were destroyed. 17 of those were homes. Other collateral damage, I don't think we know about. I think we're just starting to find out about that.
Mm.
So, you know, it's going to be, as you reported, it's going to be a few days before this thing's really totally put out and no more burning bushes exploding on us. But the perhaps most significant thing, I think, today was that the DNR, which had hinted or told Danny, in fact, on Wednesday, yesterday, days kind of go together right now, but that the cause of the fire was from a logging operation. Well, they confirmed that this afternoon, and the DNR law enforcement and Douglas County Attorney's Office say that a logging operation did start this fire, but it looks like they're not going to pursue any fine or enforcement or culpability as far as compensation. They say that a machine operator noticed the spark and smoke from its machinery on Tuesday afternoon and grabbed a fire extinguisher right away, and another harvester, logger, called 911 immediately. The DNR was on the scene in less than 10 minutes. It was just too volatile of a situation. And what they're saying is that they demonstrated no negligence, so it doesn't look like there'll be any prosecution in this case.
Well, Mike Simonson, Danny Kading, thank you both for joining us for this hour, for this segment. We're going to move on After the break, we're going to talk with Larry Gladowski, who is the incident commander for this fire and is still in Gordon working on finishing up the cleanup. So, Mike, Danny, thank you so much.
Hi, Danny.
Hi, Mike.
You guys can call each other and talk after, but thank you so much. We're taking our first break. We're talking about the Garman Road fire in Douglas County, which claimed more than 8,000 acres and dozens of structures. If you want to give a call, you can call into the program at 800-228-5615. If you've had some kind of connection to this fire, whether you're a volunteer firefighter or have some property that might have been in the line of fire. So the number is 800-228-5615. We'll take a brief break. We'll be back with Larry Gladowski of the DNR. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking this hour about the massive fire in Douglas County and Bayfield County that burned more than 8,000 acres and claimed some 50 buildings. And now we are joined by Larry Gladowski. Larry is the Department of Natural Resources, is with the Department of Natural Resources and is the incident commander in charge of this fire. Larry Gladowski, thanks so much for joining us. Oh, Larry Gladowski, there you are. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. And also joining us is Keith Kessler, the Douglas County Emergency Management Director. Keith, thank you for being here as well.
You bet, Rich.
And I want to start with Larry. And as I reported, or as I mentioned earlier in this program, this fire, the DNR claims that it's 100% contained. Does that mean you guys can pack your bags and go home?
Well, it hardly means that. It what contained means is we're confident that the fire is going to stay within the boundaries, the fire line that we've built, and we're certain it's going to not grow any larger.
Okay, and those fire lines, what kind of an acreage? We saw the acreage was decreased, but these lines are, where are they about?
Well, the lines are, you know, on the edge of the fire, and they're in, and they're still beefing those up today with bulldozers and heavy equipment. The acreage is going to continue to fluctuate as we get better GPS information from the crews in the field, but currently we're at 8,131 acres, but again, it's going to fluctuate a little bit, but not a whole lot from that acreage amount.
And why does it fluctuate?
Well, our original maps are done with aerial reconnaissance, the feedback we get from the firefighters in the field. Obviously, we don't have anybody on the line that could be using a GPS unit to accurately map it until now. And we're starting to get crews that are, you know, have a little more time on their hands, and we can get some better information and tweak our map a little bit as we go along here.
Now, the weather today is pretty dry, pretty warm, and there is a slight breeze, at least in Eau Claire. I'm not sure what the conditions are right there in the Gordon, Solon Springs area, but with conditions like this today, is there any chance that you could have a fire jump a line?
It is dry. We have low humidities, and we are concerned about the fire jumping the line. We were much more concerned yesterday with the strong northwest winds that we had. But we are concerned today, and that's why we do have crews on the line, and fire departments are patrolling around the structures within the fire area.
All right. And now, Keith Kessler, I want to bring you into the mix here. You yourself are a volunteer firefighter in Brule, I believe. What was the biggest challenge with this fire, with the Garman Road fire?
Well, on this particular fire, I didn't actually serve as a firefighter. I worked as emergency management director for the county. But from being familiar with it, you know, safety is always the biggest concern, making sure that our firefighters don't get hurt. You know, over the years, we've changed to where now we tell people, be sure you can keep one foot in the black, meaning that if there's a wind switch or whatever, instead of them being trapped in burnable fuel, they're in an area that is already burned over, and there, you know, they'll be much safer. Mm. And driving in the smoke and things, the safety with the fire trucks not running into each other, stuff like that.
Sure. And how are the fire crews holding up? I mean, how much rest have they gotten, and how are you keeping them supplied?
Well, the Department of Natural Resources Incident Management Team has a logistics section that really takes care of getting the food and the supplies, the fuel and all that stuff that's needed. They do a real good job on that. The folks are getting tired. It's a good thing that the thing is winding down. Our structural end is going to be tapering off to almost nothing now over the next 12 hours. So people are going to get a chance to rest and get caught up.
Okay, and Larry, I'm wondering how long, I mean, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but how long do you expect crews to be up in Douglas County, Bayfield counties, cleaning this up, mopping it up?
Well, we'll continue to have a presence on the fire until we get significant rain. And they're actually kind of calling for some rain here tomorrow night and Saturday, and we're hopeful that it comes. If we get significant rain, even after that, there's going to be some hot things still burning within the fire area, but we'll depend on the local fire crews to handle that. So we're for sure going to have the team mobilized through tomorrow, and then we'll hope that the weather actually materializes.
And we had a reporter, Mike Simonson, in Superior, who I'm sure you've talked to today. He was chasing the governor there in Gordon. But he mentioned that this fire just it blew up. It expanded so fast. Is that a correct interpretation of what happened?
It's definitely a correct interpretation of what happened. We had a combination of, to be frank, it was actually raining in the morning on the fire area, not a real light rain, and it was kind of cool. But the Weather Service had told us the day before that there was going to be a real dry, hot, windy weather system that moved through, and it did in the early afternoon. And the temperatures skyrocketed into the 80s, and the winds picked up, and the humidity's bottomed out. Combined with unstable conditions in the atmosphere, which allowed the smoke column to just go straight up and draw, you know, it was a column-driven fire along with a wind-driven fire. So all those combinations made for conditions that were really perfect for this type of fire.
Column-driven meaning it was sucking air in from the sides?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened, and the fire crews that were on the flanks of the fire all remarked at how windy it was right close to the fire, and as you moved away from the fire, it wasn't as windy, and that's exactly what was happening.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, Keith Kessler, you were involved in the last major fire, the one that 33 years ago, I think it was the Oak Lake fire, were you not?
Actually, it was the 5 Mile Fire.
Oh, the 5 Mile Fire. Okay, how many acres were burning that, and how does this compare with that?
Well, if memory serves me right, that was over 13,000 acres. It started down in Washburn County, moved into Douglas County. That was a pretty warm, dry day. Also, and ironically, that was the very first day I had ever worked with the DNR on wildland fire control, and it was one heck of an experience.
Well, walk us through that. What is it like as a rookie, or even someone who's maybe done some volunteer firefighting on structure fires? What is it like facing something like this?
Wildland fire is a totally different experience than structure fire fighting. You're trained on a structure fire. You're trained what to watch for, but the wildland, the wind can switch. It's so easy to get trapped. Smoke is so thick. That's why we try to teach our people now to stay where they can keep one foot in the black instead of being in front of the fire or directly on the flanks. Communications today is so much better than it was back then. Back then we had fire trucks with, if they had a CB radio, it was a good deal. I actually, being involved in this stuff for quite a few years, one of the big complaints is always lack of communications. I actually had firefighters come up to me and say, we didn't have problems talking this time. We had enough radios, we had enough radio channels, we weren't walking on each other. It was a very positive feeling for me as an emergency management director because we've invested a lot of money and time into improving our communication systems and the training involved with it. So, that was a warm, fuzzy feeling for me.
And just as I'm kind of a technology geek, but I know that the digital conversion, that had a big impact on radios, did that help free up any bandwidth at all or anything? Did that help this situation?
Well, you may be talking to the narrow banding that was done.
Yeah, yeah.
But the majority of the radio frequencies that are used by firefighters are still an analog-type system. They're not digital.
Okay.
Our new radio system that's coming through the state, the WISCOM system, will be a digital trunk system, and that will clear up the audio significantly over analog.
All right. And Larry Gladosky, there were no injuries reported and there were no deaths. Is that a surprising thing? And who do we credit for that feat?
I guess it's not a surprising thing. I'm very grateful for it. And we're always hoping for that. Not often that we get to say that at the end of an incident like that. You're right, there was no injuries, there's no accidents, and it's a great record to have after a fire of this magnitude. I credit it's a combination of the great coordination by Keith Kessler and his counterpart, Jan with Bayfield County, the tremendous outpouring of agency support that helped with the evacuation from the different counties and town constables and conservation wardens, state patrol, the fire departments that were on the fire and the DNR equipment. Everybody just took their time, were smart, had their lights on, got the evacuees moving where they needed to go. The public that was evacuated was extremely polite, and you know they were in a hurry. It was very stressful, but they did what they needed to do, and they didn't go too fast. They got out what they needed to do and got to where they needed to go. So it's a credit to everybody that was involved, and can't give enough thanks for that.
And Keith Kessler, there is a lot of cleanup. I understand that this fire was pretty much all of it was on private property. Will there be any kind of aid going to homeowners or cabin owners or anyone that owns a structure that might have been burned in this blaze?
Well, the typical type disaster assistance really doesn't kick in a lot on this kind of thing, but there are some things that are being worked on as far as getting some financial assistance. And one of the things really important here is we need to get the word out that Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, we're going to have a meeting at the Barnes Town Hall for the folks that have been involved with this fire. We're going to have our state and local elected officials, along with representation from the DNR. We're going to have some folks there that may have some ideas on where people can get some assistance, things like that, to share information to try to help those people.
All right. A reminder to listeners, we're talking about the Gehrman Road fire that happened up in Douglas County, spread into Bayfield County. This fire burned more than 8,000 acres and a number of 17 homes I'm seeing in news reports, and the rest cabins and structures. If you have a question or a comment, or if you've got a story you'd like to share, if you've got property up there, if you had friends up there, if you were just worried about anyone's safety up there, give us a call and let us know what your connection is with this disaster. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again, 800-228-5615. And Keith Kessler, when does your role in this whole thing wrap up? I mean, are you in for the long haul until all the fires put out and even after?
Well, we took our mobile command post off site this afternoon, and what we're going to be involved with now is trying, you know, it's recovery for the people. We'll be involved in trying to help find resources and things like that to help them. We probably will not be involved with any more of the fire suppression activities unless something happens, something flares up.
And Larry Gladosky, how many agencies were involved in this, fighting this fire?
There was approximately 28 law enforcement type agencies and other firefighting agencies that were involved other than fire departments. So we're talking the U.S. Forest Service sent some people. We had some firefighters from the Michigan DNR, had aircraft that came from Ontario, firefighting aircraft that came down yesterday.
Right.
On the first day, we had some firefighting aircraft from the state of Minnesota, state patrol, different county deputies. The list goes on and on and on. On top of that, there was 40 different fire departments that sent trucks to the fire throughout the last 3 days.
So how many, I mean, if we could put a number on it, how many people were involved in fighting this fire?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm going to give you a guesstimate, and then I'll say it was somewhere between 500 and 600 people.
Okay, wow. And how does the heavy hitters, you know, the big air tankers from Canada, was there a call of mutual assistance that went out?
Yeah, we do have a mutual. It's called the Great Lakes Forest Fire Compact. Includes the states of Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin, along with the provinces of Ontario. I forget the other province up there. But we frequently share resources and personnel when we have fire issues. And Ontario agreed and had their CL-415 water scoopers available. And they came down yesterday and worked on the fire for about 4 hours. We had two of those airplanes.
Those are pretty magnificent machines, aren't they?
They're really, really quite amazing. And they skim water off the lakes and drop 1,000 gallons at a time where they need to. And we really worked on one flank of the fire because we wanted to make sure that that flank was secure.
So when was the pinnacle? When did the DNR and the firefighters kind of top the hill and start getting into the more controlled territory? When did that happen?
I would say it was about dawn on Wednesday would be when I would say that we felt really good about the fire. Up until that time, it was kind of a frustrating fire for us because there's, along with the pine fuel types that the fire was burning so hot through,
mm-hmm.
there's areas of wetland and swamp which kind of hindered our line building. And, mm-hmm. you know, our firefighters and our bulldozer operators had to figure out a way around that and make sure that line was secure. And we finally felt really good about dawn, I would say. And those 12 to 13 hours that we spent before dawn came were, they went by really fast, and Keith can attest to that. We were right next to each other the whole time. So,
Keith Kessler?
Yes.
Yep.
Keith, I noticed that there are still some spot fires. Where are these spots still flaring? I mean, are we talking smoldering rubble of homes or something, or are we talking about actual chunks of forest still ablaze?
Well, I drove through there just an hour or so ago, and you know, I didn't see any real active type fire, but you will see a lot of snags and stumps burning. The DNR doesn't consider a fire like that out until they go around and there is no more smoke showing. They'll keep checking that till every bit of it is extinguished.
Okay. All right. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate it. We are hoping to get Scott Pelliquin on the line. He's a person from Chippewa Falls who's family cabin was caught up in the blaze. If anyone else out there has a story to tell, give us a call, 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. Larry Gladowski and Keith Kessler, I appreciate you both for taking time to speak with me. I imagine it's been an absolutely crazy few days for you.
It has, and they've gone by really fast, but it's been a good experience.
All right. Larry and Keith, again, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And with that, we're going to take another break here on the west side. We're talking about the Garman Road fire that erupted on Tuesday in Douglas County and has since burned more than 8,000 acres. That number could change, but still, it's a magnificent disaster. It's just a massive, massive fire. Luckily, no one was killed, no one was hurt, and right now it's just recovery for those who have lost property. If you have a story to tell, if you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615, and you can also post a comment or a question on the Westside Facebook page. By the way, on the Westside Facebook page, I've got a link to the DNR's Garman Road fire page. Some really amazing photos, also a fire map, and all the latest information from the Department of Natural Resources. So check it out. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll be back. We'll hear from Scott Pelliquin and Steve Edge, a forestry official with the DNR, who will tell us about the fire danger in western Wisconsin. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side. We're talking this hour about the Garman Road fire on on the West Side. It's the fire that erupted on Tuesday, sometime during Tuesday. I imagine it was in the morning. And since then, it's burned 8,000 acres, and it's just a massive disaster. Luckily, no one was killed, no one was hurt, but there were 50-some properties that were destroyed in this fire. Also, thousands of acres of beautiful, beautiful area up in northwestern Wisconsin are scorched, and it'll take a while for it to grow back. I'm joined now by Steve Edge, and Steve is a DNR forestry official here in Eau Claire, and he's keeping an eye on the fire danger in western Wisconsin. Steve, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
And also, we've got our first call of the evening. We were hoping to hear from Scott Pelequin, whose family lost a cabin up in the fire in Douglas County, but we'll keep trying. Right now, we have our first guest or first listener caller of the hour, and we are going to go to Nancy in Ridgeland. And Nancy, you're on the air.
Hi, Rich. How are you tonight?
Doing well. Yourself?
Well, I'm fine, thank you. I've spent quite a bit of time up in that area with a company called Down to Earth Tours,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering, I haven't heard, and maybe you've already told the parameters of the fire, but where is the, can you tell the kind of, which 8,000 acres from maybe roads or county highways or towns or something that would be discernible as to exactly where it is? I understand it's around Gordon and Barnes area.
Yeah, this is a very generic answer, but I don't have the map in front of me. It looks to be maybe 10 miles east of Solon. It's kind of along Highway 27. And there are some county roads, but all I can say is go to the DNR. There's an exact map, the latest map that they've got, and you can get the information there. Steve Edge, can you give us any better definitions?
Yeah, the location is actually closest to Barnes. It's just west of town, and actually the fire burned right up towards the town of Barnes. It was along County Highway A,
okay,
just to the west of Barnes there.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'll go up to the website and take a look. I just hadn't heard exactly where it was.
All right. Thank you so much, Nancy. And anyone else that might have a question or a comment or a story to share, the number is 800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. And, you know, Steve, this was the third time I've had a question from a person saying, where exactly is this fire? You know, the reporters are saying it's a Douglas County fire. It's hard to define sometimes.
Oh yeah, the location can be hard to define. But one of the amazing things now with the electronic age, of course, is the information that is available on the web. Our agency was pretty quick in putting up a website on the fire up mm-hmm. there, and with a map location and some information, which is just. It's really mind-boggling as far as how quick information is available this day and age compared to even just the last fairly major fire we've had in Wisconsin was back in 2005 and
right.
with Cottonville over by Wisconsin Rapids. And just since that time, the progress that we've made on getting information available to people accessible on the web, it is amazing.
Yeah, the DNR has come a long way. I mean, I think there's a DNR Twitter account and all that, and all that fancy technical jargon. So we in western Wisconsin are lucky enough to not have had this massive blaze happen here. But what is happening? I mean, we talked earlier, and there were some fires in that you were kind of following today.
Well, every year we realize a spring fire season comes along once the snows leave and the vegetation out there has not greened up yet with the spring and summer weather. And this year we've had just a tremendously delayed spring. And actually, April is our most common month every year for forest fires in Wisconsin. Most of the fires occur in April. This year we had snow on the ground through most of April, it seemed, and so things are delayed and we're seeing it in May this year. But prior to green up, the vegetation out there in the countryside is very ripe for being able to burn when we haven't had rain. And also, this is the time of year we see the weather systems with the lowest humidities that come into our area in the springtime. And today was an example of that with humidities down in the 20%, 25% range. And as firefighters, we watch relative humidity and wind, those two parameters of weather, very closely, because they are very indicative of how likely fires are going to start and then also how quickly they're going to spread.
It just seems crazy to me because not long ago we had a snowstorm here in Eau Claire. We had, you know, 6 inches of snow, or 9 inches actually. And also up north, they had some pretty heavy snow cover too. I wonder, what about soil type? How big of a role does that play? Because up in northern Wisconsin, it's very sandy and kind of a lot of scrub oak and just a lot of dryness, it seems like. Is it a different case here?
Soil type does play a factor in our wildland fire in Wisconsin. And you mentioned the sandy soils. Sandy soils will dry out quicker than our heavier soils. I think that's fairly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they green up slower in the spring. They also support certain types of vegetation that are much more hazardous as far as forest fires, and that's namely pine trees. Pine trees love the sandy soils, and we see that with our native jack pine and red pine, also our native white pine. The other thing a lot of people don't realize is the chemical changes that the pine trees go through this time of year as the soil thaws out and the trees start pumping moisture up through their root systems. The chemical changes in the pine needles reach a peak of flammability right about now. This year it's delayed, of course. Usually it's right about the third week of April to the first of May.
Mm-hmm.
That first week of May, that's when pine needles are most ignitable and combustible. And
no kidding.
That is why we can see our largest fires typically right in this kind of narrow window in the spring each year.
All right. That's fascinating. I had no idea that pine trees can be more flammable sometimes than others.
Well, when the buds start elongating and we finally see new needle growth and pollination, then that chemical process in the pine needles switches over and the amount of moisture in that live fuel changes dramatically, and we typically see a fairly quick decline in that combustibility of those pine needles at some point in the green-up process here.
We're talking about the Garman Road fire in Douglas County, which consumed 8,000 acres in the last few days and multiple structures. Now we're focusing more on western Wisconsin and what our fire dangers are, and we're going to get into some tips and some basic ideas of how to keep this from happening in our backyard. Right now, we've got another call, though. We're going to go to Iowa County, I believe. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind? What's your story?
Well, like you mentioned before, Scotty Pelican, his cabin, our family cabin went up, and I'm actually part of the family cabin that went up.
You are? Okay. So
yeah.
When did you first know that it had been lost to the fire?
Well, yesterday morning, I was having breakfast. I called my mom up for some reason, and she told me that 9,000 acres burned.
Mm-hmm.
And then she told me, of course, the cabin burnt up. The cabin, the whole entire structure is gone.
Were you able to get up there to see?
Yeah, we got up there today, and
what's it look like?
Nothing but tin roof. Everything's gone. A lot of blackened. It looks like a forest fire. Everything's blackened. There's no foliage on the trees. It's just gone.
And I was speaking with Scott yesterday, Scott Pelican, about this, and he said that this was a really hot fire, and he mentioned something about some canoes that had been there. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the canoes are, one canoe is gone altogether.
These are wooden canoes, or?
No, these are metal, aluminum. And the other one's the size of a buffalo's head in there, basically. It's totally gone, but there's no bottom. There's some of the sides is gone. It's hot fire. It's disintegrated, basically.
Wow. And yeah. Steve Edge, how hot do these fires get? I mean, that seems like, what is it? It's got to be over 1,200 degrees to melt aluminum.
Yeah, I don't have the exact measurements on degrees, but
it's 1,220 degrees. They get very hot
in a crown fire situation where it's rolling through the tops of pine trees. It will melt metals like that. Yes.
Wow. And Kevin, so what happens now? I mean, you saw that the cabin was gone and the woods and the surrounding area was burnt up. Has the family decided whether to rebuild or not?
I can't answer that because it actually falls on the founding fathers and the associates associated with them that have to do it more so.
Okay.
I'm just basically the kid at heart who's still at stuff, couple with a paint job or that. But I think they're going to rebuild. I think I heard the talk of that. And I don't know what they're going to do with all these blackened trees, though. That's a lot of icky blackened trees.
All right. Well, Kevin, thank you so much. It looks like we've got Scott Pelequin's mother, Lois, on the line. We're going to get to her next. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate you sharing your story. I'm sorry to hear for your loss or hear about your loss.
Thank you. The memories are more...
Right.
Gone more than anything else.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And Steve, what about the trees? When the trees are torched like that, are they dead or can they grow back?
For the most part, when you got that hot of temperatures, the trees are dead. And there will be salvage operations. Much of the wood won't be usable. Some of it will. A lot of cleanup, but the landscape will rejuvenate itself. That's Mother Nature, and it'll take some time, though. It'll be evident for decades, actually, the fires that do burn, but the green vegetation will return a little more each year as we go along.
There was I had a cabin growing up in Wascott, and there was a big fire out there. I think that might have been the 5 Mile fire that Keith Kessler was talking about. I'm not sure, but you could still see the line where there was short trees, and then right next to it there was large trees. And I remember as a kid walking out in the woods, and all of a sudden you'd fall into a big, deep trench, and that was obviously the fire line. So,
yeah, we use plow furrows to control on the flanks of the fire, and those plow furrows do stay for quite a while, especially in the sand country.
Yeah.
It seems like they do hang out for quite a while, but...
Yeah, it was kind of spooky finding that and then just knowing what it was, realizing what it was. We go now to the phones again, and we've got Lois Pelequin. Lois, you're on the air. Thank you so much. What does this loss mean to your family, this loss of your cabin?
Well, I was telling somebody, you know, everybody asks you that, and everybody says, you know, how sorry they are, but really it's the memories.
Yeah.
You know, the cabin can be rebuilt. And but, you know, it's all the memories that were there, and you always have those. So is it so terrible? And then when I hear that nobody got hurt with these wonderful people that, you know, worked on the fire, I mean, it's a blessing in disguise, really.
Mm-hmm. That's a great attitude to have. And it is really amazing that something this large, that something so hot that it can melt a canoe doesn't hurt anybody. Nobody's hurt by it.
So, yeah, and as you drive through it, we just drove through it today, or through the area, and you can hardly imagine how these men contain that fire. And you'll see that we have our cabin is, you know, on the land, and right around us in the area, in fact, we can see them all. There's about 5 other places that did not burn, and you can see that the fire went almost up to the side of the house, and they saved those houses. Another thing I was going to mention, I wish somebody else would call in and bring it up. Somebody that lives in that area said the way they saw the animals running from the fire, it was almost like a Disney movie. And I've only heard one person talk about that, and that, to me, I don't think people realized the amount of animals that were there, you know, too.
Mm-hmm. Steve, can you mention anything about the animals? Here in the office, we're talking about maybe turkeys, any animals that were nesting or something or had eggs. How devastating to wildlife is something like this?
Well, the animals that are in that area, of course, fire is a natural part of the landscape, and they're going to try to avoid it and get out of the way. Mm-hmm. Some do, some do not. Those that have nesting and that sort of thing, that's part of nature, too. They lose nests, they re-nest, and that sort of thing. So it's an interesting thing to observe and note. I also wanted to comment as far as structures that were lost compared to structures that weren't lost
How
in the fire.
How can that be when they're that close?
And what we preach in Wildland Fire is defensible space around structures, cabins, homes, and so forth. If you're in a pine type of environment or landscape, the key is keeping those pine trees at least 30 feet away, even 100 feet away from structures, because that's what can help ignite the structure, and also making sure a structure doesn't have a lot of eaves that contain pine needles or decks. Decks are a problem because there's space underneath and the pine needles can accumulate under there, or leaves, and then embers get blown under there and that can ignite the structure. So we talk about defensible space and we talk about the characteristics of the structure to prevent those.
All right. Well, let's get into some of the things. Well, first, Lois, thank you so much. And you mentioned that the structure, the cabin can be rebuilt. Are there plans yet? Has there been talk about rebuilding it?
Yes, there is. There's talk. You know, there's a group of relatives, and they talk about it. So it probably will. You know, when you've had something for 45 years, you know, you probably will build it up again.
All right. Well, thank goodness nobody was hurt in the family, and as you've got such a great positive attitude, I appreciate you sharing your story with us.
And again, please thank everybody that worked on that fire. None of us can be, you know, say enough for them.
Right. Will do. All right, Lois Peliquin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And so let's talk prevention, Steve. We've got... It's a shorter window now. The green up is happening pretty quick for fires. But fire danger, are we in a burning ban situation in western Wisconsin?
Right now, the northern two-thirds of the state approximately are in very high fire danger conditions, and the south third is what we call high because they're a little further along in the green up process. It progresses from south to north, obviously.
Yeah.
And but these are conditions we can have these type fires if we get a certain day with higher winds and low humidity. Hopefully the green up process will continue. If we get some rain this weekend, like they're predicting, the fire dangers will ease up a bit for us. But there's still going to be potential for another couple few weeks before we really get it out of the woods, so to speak,
sure,
as far as the forest fire game. As far as prevention, the number one cause of forest fires in Wisconsin every year is debris burning. People that are out in their yards cleaning up, burning some brush, some sticks, some newspapers or whatever, and they don't quite realize the potential and it gets away from them, or they have a burn barrel in the yard and there's too much in there and they don't realize that the fire's not out and they go to bed that night or whatever, and fires escape. So that's the number one cause, and we really try to stress to people to be careful and look for options to not burn. Reuse the material, recycle it, compost, whatever you can, because if you don't, you know, light a fire, obviously you're not going to have one escape on you.
Right.
And you avoid the liability there, too, that is potential of lighting a fire and having to escape, a person can be liable for the costs of putting that fire out and liable for the damages that fire causes. So it can be serious business.
I bet.
The one big tool we use with DNR in our fire protection areas is our burning permit system. And we have suspended all burning permits right now through tonight anyway. With tomorrow's, hopefully we get some moisture, some rain tomorrow, and we might be able to implement allowing burning in the evenings again. But our permits, when we do have them, it's limited from 6 p.m. to midnight each day, and that's when the winds die down, the humidity levels come up, and it's the safest time to burn.
And what about, I always see, when I see burning bans or the suspension of burning permits, I always see something like, if you have a fire for warmth, if you, or for cooking, Like campfires, are they still okay then or no?
Cooking and campfires are handled differently. They are not requiring burning permits per se, but there's a very fine line between what's a campfire and what somebody's cleaning up their lawns with. So you have to be careful. When in doubt, check with authorities and get a permit.
All right. Steve Edge, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on and sharing with us this last part of the hour. That's our time. I'd like to thank all my guests, Mike Simonson, Danny Kading, Larry Gladowski, Keith Kessler, the Pelequins, and Steve Edge. Also, a big thanks to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress and Dean Kallenbeck for handling on-air production, Hillary Kuzan for promotions, and Grace Fair for promotions as well. Next week, we'll be talking about Western Wisconsin exports. Until then, thanks for listening. Be safe out there, and we'll chat again next Thursday.